We are recording. I want to say hi to Kathy with a C. That's not you, is it? To Peggy Bear, our awesome aunt, Megan, Karen, Kristen, I think from Colorado, but I could be wrong. Yep, she just gave me a thumbs up. Rose, oh, and there's Millie. And there's, oh my God, there's two Kathy.
There's three Kathy.
There's three Kathys with a C on there. That's crazy. And there's Emily. So welcome to all you awesome people. And we're so glad to have you. That's the end of my opening.
All right. Well, you guys, I just wanted to start by saying to me, and I think to all of us, it's another heavy day. I'm having a hard time waking up. You know, just so much bad news. I actually woke up in the middle of the night, and I can't remember why I picked up my phone. It was to reset my alarm. So, you know, bad news today, again, in Vegas, and on top of all the bad news we had over the weekend, and it's a lot. And I just want to start by saying that it is a lot. And if you do feel overwhelmed, you're not alone. That's why we have community. You know, sometimes when I have this therapist that I love, and sometimes when I go see her and I tell her all these things that overwhelm me, and she's like, that's why you build a community, because you can't carry it by yourself. And a community doesn't just talk about, you know, feeling overwhelmed. A community actually does something to make the world a better place. And what that means is we, of course, first feel today is just a day to just kind of comprehend what occurred in Vegas and just to kind of take it in and just breathe and just, you know, we don't have to do anything quite yet. But when the time comes, the goal is to transform that pain and fear into compassion and into courage and into giving. And I know there's a lot going on, but we can give. And I don't just mean money, and I don't just mean a blood drive for Vegas. I mean, we can, even with this fear, we can choose to love our families, to love our neighbors, to love our community, to make different choices than fear and anger. You know, we saw Brene Brown last week, and one of the things she said that was really meaningful to me and to everyone is that when terrorists, and when I'm using the word terrorists on purpose, because this person who did this, this is an act of domestic terrorism. When they make these choices, regardless of who they are or where they're from, it's not just about the act, it's about creating a sense of fear. And so that people act differently and start to turn against each other. And we have to choose to not do that. We will not get our hate. We will not become different people. We will not stop trusting, and we will not stop loving, and we will not give up hope. These are not things, these are non-negotiable things. And so that's where we got to start from. And we do keep living, and we keep living in honor of the people who are not. We, again, take a day, take a week, do whatever you need to do, but we continue on. And we do good things for people, and we're kind, and that's the best thing we can do. If we go fear and anger, we're just feeding into exactly what's trying to be perpetrated on us.
Playing into their hands.
Right. So that's what I have to say. So does anybody have something they want to say or that they want to share about today? Or question
regarding what happened in Vegas?
Yeah, well, or in Puerto Rico, or in Texas, or in Florida, or with our government. I mean, we're being inundated, and not all bad news. There's good news that is out in the world too. But right now, I'm feeling a little inundated. So I'm assume I'm not alone. So does anybody? You don't have to ask anything. I just want to make sure that we don't jump over such a big issue going on in our country right now. I want to make sure that people feel like there's opportunity to discuss.
Yeah, and even if you don't have a question, if you just want to share, we're a community, a virtual community of like-minded people, and let's kind of use each other's energy. So if anybody wants to share or ask or whatever, I see Rose just raised her hand. So just so everybody knows, there's some new people on here. She literally raised her hand, which is fine. I happen to catch it. There's another way that you can, if you click on participants, you can click on raise hand, or I think you can even
just write something in chat,
or you could do something in chat. So, but, and then the other thing is for the newbies, it's weird. The audio is weird. If there's two different parties talking at the same time. So what I do is I'm going to unmute Rose, And after she's done asking her question or talking, then I'll mute her back, because if we have a back and forth with both lines being open, the audio kind of drops like 30%. So it's kind of annoying. So go ahead. Rose, how are you?
Oh, hold on. I can't hear. Hold on, Rose.
Hold on.
We got you. There you go.
Okay. There you go. We got you. All right, go ahead.
I guess I just, it's really struck me this morning that I think there's something happening in our government that makes it okay to be outwardly, frankly, racist, outwardly unkind, outwardly, it's not uncouth anymore. Mm-hmm. All this progress that I feel like we've worked on in variety, you know, over, I don't know even how many years, the history of our country, it's like making it okay to be that sort of, it's like spinning up the energy in the world in a way that is so dangerous, and where people feel like these things are okay. And I'm not saying everybody feels like that's okay. That would be ridiculous, but just it's the opposite direction of where we could be going. And it's very disturbing. It's hard to know the line of activism and still maintaining a conscious effort to choose your words carefully, to be kind and compassionate. It's hard to know that line, and it's hard to be in a conversation with the average person.
I agree.
So I'm going to unmute you and I say a few words. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird because we're all human beings and we get mad when we see things that we disagree with that kind of like disrupts the foundation of who we are. And I feel like we absolutely need to give each other space to kind of have those kind of reactionary, visceral responses. Now, not towards any people, or if you are going to do it with somebody who you trust and love and say, this MF and blah, 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 blah. Like, I want to create the space to be able to allow for that. But then when it's time to do something about it, the response needs to be from an act of compassion and love. Because if we drop down to the same fear-based thinking that kind of got this situation to us in the first place, then it's, as much as we feel like we're helping, I feel like we're just kind of furthering it along, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. And Rose, one thing that helps me, because I know exactly what you're saying and I feel similarly, is that years ago, even before the election and everything, I heard Ian LaVanzant, I don't know if you guys know Ian LaVanzant, but she's a wonderful teacher that I love. I heard her say, you know, what's happening now around, not, you know, around the world, but in our country too, obviously, is there's a lot of pain and an infected wound that's going on. And for the wound to heal, it has to be brought to the surface. And it has to, so like, you know, there's a deep cut, a deep wound, and that all has to be brought to the surface to heal. And so all the progress we did make is still real progress. It's not like it disappeared. We still made that progress. But now all the progress that hasn't been made, meaning people who weren't going along for the ride or people who had different experiences, that is the infection that's coming to the surface. So part of us want to think, and I'm part of this, I want to just jump over all that and be like, yeah, but progress. And they're getting left behind, but there are people who still have a lot of pain and anger and fear, and that has to rise up so we can heal that. And then we make progress again. And that's kind of the way of things. You know what I mean? Like, nothing is a straight line. And everything kind of goes up and down. And why does it go up and down? Because there's, you know, we have progress and then there's people or things or whatever that don't get healed or don't get listened to. And that has to rise up, and it's ugly and it's painful and it can feel unbearable. And I agree with you that sometimes something, like I think about even 10 years ago, this would, you know, 20 years ago, this wouldn't have been okay. But it doesn't mean it is okay. It means that people were feeling this way all along, Rose. Meaning not everybody, but there were people, we thought everyone was coming along for the ride, but there were certain people who were not feeling this way. And now that has to rise to the surface where there's a light shining on it. And then we can deal with it, because, you know, there's a lot of news that I used to not pay attention to. I was a little bit, you know, it's funny, my dad, my dad and I used to talk a lot about politics, and he would tell me things like, Kathy, you know, because he used to live in Florida, and some of the friends that they would spend time with, he'd be like, you have no idea what they say. And I'd be like, Dad, come on, you know, Obama's president, life is good, things are moving in the right direction. You know, Dad, you don't know what you're talking about. And I would almost be kind of not thoughtful about what he was trying to tell me. And what he wasn't trying to give me fear. He was trying to say, there's another world out there that's, you know, there's other people who are saying things, and we need to come together. You know what I mean? We need to start all seeing what's happening instead of just looking at things we want to look at. It's my long way of saying I'm right there with you. But I try to look at this outpouring of ugly as a wound that needs to be healed, and that it has to come to the surface or else we can't deal with it. And I think that a lot of, you know, one of my most interesting stories is after Charlottesville, there was kind of a leader who he was leading the charge, and there was a camera following him around. I don't know if you guys saw this. I think it was on Vox. And there was a camera following him around, and he was explaining why he was so angry, and he was so against everybody he was marching against, if it be racially or, you know, I can't even remember who he was angry at. He was just, he's like, this march needs to happen. And then afterwards, the same camera caught him sobbing about what he had done and the trouble that he was in, and what he had no idea what he was doing. And that man is now different. But if that hadn't happened, and again, I don't think he's the only one. It's very difficult.
And I don't know how related this is, but, you know, and we try our best to kind of stay above or outside of politics, but just to use politics as an example.
And can I say something before you say that?
Sure.
Everything is politics. That's something I've learned, is that people are politics. And so even though, to Todd's point, we try to not be like, here's our political viewpoint, how can we not?
Yeah. So I will say that I voted for Hillary, and I am unpleased because there could be people on this call that voted for Trump. So I don't want to ostracize anybody, but it just so happens I don't think that our president's doing that good of a job. And the way I try to get my arms around it is whatever is going to happen next, and when I say next, I could be meaning midterms, I could be meaning the next president that we elect after, or I could be meaning 10 years from now. But the fact that this guy was elected is going to somehow catapult us to another thing. And the only way it would have worked is if we would have taken, in my opinion, steps backwards. Because, you know, I used to watch American Idol thinking everything was fine in this country. And then this guy got elected, and I'm like, oh my God, there's so many displeased people in this country that need their voices heard. Mm-hmm. And I need to figure out how to be compassionate and loving towards those people, because the only way that they're going to heal is by listening to them and understanding how they got it to be that way. And otherwise it would never happen. So I guess I'm trying to just make sense out of something that's like, why did this happen? Mm-hmm. And it's not an easy thing. And there's times when I'm like, screw it all. But,
and that's kind of what I was trying to say at the beginning, is I'm tired, and I sometimes just want to wake up and hear something good. Sometimes I search the news for something good, and I feel like it's like almost like self-harm, because I'm looking for an article that tells me something good and I can't find it. But I posted something on Facebook this morning about something I saw in the Book of Awakening, which I talk a lot about on the show, Mark Nepo's Book of Awakening. And it just so happened today on October 2nd. He said, I'll read it to you because I took a picture of it, because I was like, wow, that was timely.
While you're pulling, oh, you have it right there. Go ahead.
He said in his thing for today, October 2nd, but his cries are absorbed into silence as the sun always rises just when the night seems like it will never end. As the sky holds everything flying and everything falling, there is something indestructible at the center of each of us, though the pain of being transformed and rearranged while we are still alive often feels unbearable. So it is, there is a part of us that is indestructible, that no matter what news we hear, we can continue to give, we can continue to love, we can continue to live with compassion, that when people are being hate-filled, being hateful of them doesn't work. Hate just creates more hate. It feels good in the moment to be hateful towards someone who's hateful, but it doesn't do anything. You just feed into who they are. You just become them. And it doesn't, like Todd said, Todd hears a lot of my anger about things going on in the world. It's not as if I don't express it.
Yeah.
I'm not telling you to stuff it down. I'm saying don't act on it. Take a breath. Choose something different.
And share with somebody who's going to love you regardless of how you're expressing. Because you need, if you just stuff it, it's no good.
Yeah.
I want to address something real quick to Megan. Megan has a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old. And they're super sensitive about news of death. How do I talk to my kids about this? Well, this is oversimplistic and Kathy's going to correct me. 8 and 6, I wouldn't tell them. I would try to shelter them from this. Now you're like, well, the 8th grader's in 2nd grade and he's going to hear something at school. When that happens, you know, hopefully if he or she hears something, then he'll bring it up to you after school. But I wouldn't say I have to talk to my kids about this. It's too young, they're too raw, and I would try to hide it from them.
Or if not hide it, if they bring it up, then it's on the table, Megan. Like, I kind of think about violence in our society as similar to when we're talking to our kids about sex, that you just give them as much as they need.
Yes,
in that moment.
People were hurt.
Yeah, that's exactly, like, my 14-year-old is going to know all about this. And she and I are going to, not because I'm going to tell her, but she's everywhere, all over social media, everywhere. So she and I will have a discussion about it. I actually think we said something this morning. And when I say discussion, I don't mean a sit-down discussion. I mean, like, wow, you know, what is this? Where is this? But the 8 and the 6-year-old, if they ask, if they say something happened, you can say, yes, a lot of people were hurt today. And we got to send our good thoughts and our good vibes to them and their families. And we have to, what we can do to help this situation is we can be loving to people and we can be kind, because the people who got hurt, they were hurt by someone who was in a lot of pain. And that person in a lot of pain, you know, like, you don't have to focus on the minutiae of what happened or the details or how it happened. It's more about the feeling, because that's all they need to know. They just need to know they're okay. They need to know that. You know, but to Todd's point, it's not necessarily about hiding literally. It's about, you don't need to say, I need to sit down and talk.
Well, and because, you know, some people are like, well, that's the news. They got to know what's up. Well, there's a lot of things. What does the news mean? The news means that's what happens to be on TV today. There's a lot of other things that are newsworthy that have nothing to do with Las Vegas. So it's tricky. Trust your gut.
This is the biggest, you know, that this is like the biggest domestic terrorist act in our country, right?
Well,
I guess what I mean by it is,
what does that mean?
What I mean is that there will be more news around it just based on the amount of people who were harmed.
I understand,
you know,
it's a big story,
yeah.
But we don't watch the news in our house. I get my news. We talked about this one show or two shows ago. I get something called The Skim, which is a morning thing. And then I do my NPR Up First. And I kind of stay away from it aside from that. You know, social media sometimes seeps into it, but I don't really, and I go in waves. There's times when I invest and read a lot of articles on Wall Street Journal or something like that, but I don't do it when I feel like things are getting too out of balance and I'm being brought down as a result of the news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a balance in there. You don't need to bring it up, but if they ask you, you give them the basics. You don't go deep into it. And what they want to know is am I going to be okay? They just want to know they're going to be all right.
Megan, give me a thumbs up or thumbs down. Do you want to follow up that up with any questions, or are you good? You're good. Okay.
Thanks, honey.
I'm going to move over to Jennifer, who I believe has a question that is related/unrelated to this.
Okay. First of all, I just want to say thank you to you guys for creating this community, because it's very valuable to me and I get a lot out of it. So I'm very grateful to you guys. So thank you. Then the other thing is, so you guys have been talking a lot about braving the wilderness. And my question is, I guess, twofold. So kind of related to everything that we're talking about today and what Rose said. So if I want to be out in the world more and I want to love louder and I want to be a force for good, and when I do that, although I'm very comfortable in my own conviction about it, when met with the resistance from or criticism from the outside world, Are there some strategies that you guys have to help shore me up when I'm out in that wilderness receiving that criticism? And when, quite frankly, I just want to like run back to my house and hide and not try again. And then the other thing is, related to that, what happens when, or I guess this part's really hard because something that just happened recently, also happened in an environment where one of my kids, my oldest, who's in high school, was exposed to this criticism. So it was criticism of me in an environment where he goes to school every day. Mm. And I did have a conversation with him where I said, listen, I am really sorry if any of this caused you any trouble at school, if it embarrassed you in any way. And I did say to him that I, you know, if I did, I want to hear from you about it. At the same time, the things I'm doing are things that I believe in that are really, really important. You know, standing up for respecting each other, standing up for kindness. These are things that are really important to me. So I can't stop doing them, but I want, if I'm doing them in a way that it's hurting you, then I want to adjust that. So I did have that conversation with him, but I guess now that my kids are older and kind of what people think about them matters more, I'm having trouble navigating that because I don't want to hurt my kids, but I want to do what I believe is right too. Mm-hmm. So he did say to me after the conversation, just to say in this instance, he goes, Mom, I'm over it. Everything's okay. And he gave me a hug. Mm-hmm. So he told me that I needed to move on too. But so those are the kind of the two things, like how you stand up to the criticism and then how you gauge things in terms of the impact on your kids.
Mm. Got it.
All right. I'm going to mute you. All right. Two things. And then I'm going to let Sweetie talk. first of all, Jennifer, you can handle this. You are a strong, empowered woman. And you have obviously the support of Kathy and I and everybody in this community, but you just know that you can handle it. So when there are criticisms and when it does hit the fan, you can deal with it. So I just want to empower you and remind you of the strong, beautiful, empowered woman that you are and that the world needs more people like you. Number one. Number two is when you're dealing with somebody directly who is disagreeing with you or thinks you're whatever, off your rocker, the one tool is ask questions. Like if you're worried about the messages and getting met or whatever, ask questions how they got to be who they are. Because what you're doing when you ask questions is you're disarming them a little bit. You're encouraging them to put their shield down. And instead of trying to be righteous and get your point across at all costs, questions are a wonderful way to do it. And although that you didn't really kind of get into what happened with your son and you don't need to, I think we all get the gist, but you probably did something that is kind of weird. Like you're talking about kindness or you're some new age mom or you listen to Zen Parenting Radio, whatever the case is, there's a lot of us out there that do that. Our kids are so used to the whole Zen parenting concept. I think they're over being embarrassed by us.
Well,
it's just part of our makeup.
Cameron told me that she was sitting next to a boy in math, and he said, your parents are those Zen parenting people, and my parents listen. And Cameron was mortified. Mm-hmm. Mortified. And I was kind of like, oh, I do the same thing with my kids. What Todd was saying about questioning and curiosity, instead of saying, oh, no, you shouldn't be, or what does that mean? Or he didn't say anything mean. I was like, just tell me why. Why is that mortifying? I'm just curious. And she's like, I just don't know who this boy is. And I don't know what his parents hear. And I totally respect that. You know, I'm like, I understand. I totally get that. And, you know, going on that train, Jen, it like, because Todd and I are kind of in that world with you where we, you know, speak out a lot and our community is not teeny. It's not small. Well, we live in a community of about 40,000 people. So to some people that's huge and to some people that's tiny. And we used to live in Chicago where, you know, millions. So, But there are definitely people who disagree with us or have an opinion about certain things. And they don't necessarily, they're not, I don't think we've ever gotten negative, like people angry, but there's definitely people who question or make fun of or whatever. And to Todd's point, you know, like about being strong enough to handle it, it doesn't make me super comfortable either. But I guess this is what I come down to. What's the alternative? Because people, you know, if we are going to practice true belonging and belong to ourselves, which means speaking about what's important to us, living our life of intention, taking care of other people, and people get annoyed at that or angry about that, what's our option? To quit? To give up? Like, it almost makes me laugh because, yeah, sometimes I disappoint people or they have a different opinion and they think I should have said what they said or they think, but... And I definitely do what Todd says, where I question or I become curious about their thoughts. But at the end of the day, when I'm sitting with myself, I'm like, what would I have done differently? And maybe there is something, maybe I responded in a smart alecky way, or maybe I didn't listen as well as I could. There's always something to learn, but I can't be anything other than I am.
And your son doesn't want you, you know, he might want the short run, like, Mom, just don't embarrass me. But really what your boy wants is for you to be the fullest expression of yourself. That's what he wants more than anything. In the short term, he might want to just have his life convenient. And, you know, I totally get it. Like, my dad used to and still does embarrass the piss out of me every time he used to come out to watch me play basketball or whatever. It's kind of like just what parents do. Like, we're just really good, especially when they get older. Teenagers forget it. Like, I could be doing something that makes complete sense, but if I do it in front of their friends, my God, it's a big deal.
And then the last thing I'll say, and this is more pragmatic, so this may come more as like a Todd thing to say, but one thing I have decided to do, and Jen, maybe this will relate to what you're saying, is that I do a lot of stuff in the community, Todd and I do, but I've stayed away from the girls' schools a little bit, meaning that we've done a few things in the schools, but there is some distance that I have from their lives a little bit, where I'm, you know, I'm not, I, how do I explain this? You know what I mean?
We don't purposefully go say, let's go do a talk at your school, but our work does seep into their lives.
It's a little bit intermingled because, you know, we do a screening in town and people from town are going to come, or, you know, we have a conference in town and people are going to come, or we have a talk at the library and people are going to come. But I've tried to not show up as like a presenter at their school. I mean, that just because when they were little, they wouldn't have mind, but now they're 14, almost 13 and 10. So I'm trying to create a little more of a separation between my life and theirs. And again, that may not have anything to do with what you're talking about, you know, Jen. It may be like, well, that's not the problem. But for anybody listening, if you feel like you're speaking out about something, sometimes, you know, I have a lot of friends who run the PTA and the school board, and they're there doing that, and that is their thing. And I honor that, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just sometimes to find those spaces of, you know, staying out of their space the best way we can.
I'm going to unmute her.
Yeah.
What do you think?
So much of what I do is related to the schools because I work through the Educational Foundation. I'm their parent education coordinator. I volunteer. It's totally voluntary. And there was, after this criticism, there was part of me that's like, forget it. I'm quitting. I'm not doing any of this stuff anymore. But I like let myself have those feelings for a little while. And one of the things I did say to my son was kind of to try to make it a learning experience was the criticism I received was through one of his teachers who did not know that I am, he didn't really understand my involvement. He certainly didn't know I was Nicholas's mom.
Interesting.
So it happened in one of his classes. So when it came back to me through him, it was like a dagger to my heart. It really was. It was like so hurtful. And I told him, I said, listen, you know, here I am trying to do something good and foster respect and sensitivity and kindness in our community. And your own teacher then disrespected me and didn't show sensitivity or kindness toward me. And I mean, I cried in front of him and I said, listen, that was really, really hurtful to me. So I think to Todd's point, like he cares about me more as his mom than he does about what his friends think. So he gave me a big hug and he was like, it's okay, mom. Like, I'm all right. But I also don't want to create, like, there's part of me that wants to be a model of that. Like, all right, so we go out in the world and sometimes it's really hard. And sometimes, you know, people don't understand or we fail or we encounter roadblocks and it hurts. And then show him, like, it's okay to be hurt and vulnerable, but then show him also, like, okay, now I get up and I move on and I do the next right thing. Mm-hmm. So, but it's been really, really painful. And I guess, you know, in terms of this whole dialogue, it's so timely with Braving the Wilderness. Like, I just, there's part of me that I'm just not sure that I'm going to have it in me. So I will try to remember the words that I do have it in me. I believe. it's hard. So anyone else on the talk who's looking to do it, I do agree with Kathy though. Like, it's hard, but what's the alternative, especially now? I have some signs in front of my house and I know that that opens up to me to criticism from my neighbors, but you know what? I'm keeping them out there because I don't care. It's what I believe in.
That's right.
And I think to your point too, I think my kids know that's what I'm about.
Yeah.
And Jen, so thank you everybody.
To that point, like, here's the thing is, okay, I love everything you said and my brain is spinning because you can have the signs in your yard and have that role in the school board or that school and you're going to do it differently. Meaning you are going to, when people criticize you, say, tell me more about, you know, what you're thinking and okay, thank you for offering your opinion. And you are going to not only stand in the midst of that, but you are going to create an alternative to what other people do, which is fight about it. You're not going to do it. And you're also not going to take the signs down. You are going to say, if your neighbor came over and said something, or you could even, if you guys had a block party or something, say to people, you know, what do you guys think about these signs? Like, we had a next door neighbor, we love him dearly, he's moved away, Mr. T. He did not like our signs.
No.
And we had humor about it with him. We loved him. He loved us. And so he would say, oh, I can't believe this or I can't believe that. And we'd be like, I know, Mr. T, like, we hear you and we love you. And so my point is that this is an opportunity for you to stand. That's what the wilderness means, right? You're going to be out there and you're going to feel like I don't belong anywhere. I feel like I'm working really hard. But when people try and engage you in something non-compassionate or something where they want to fight with you, choose something different. And that's the practice. And for your children to watch, and that doesn't mean you're not going to feel anything. It's not, it's just that choice in itself dissipates everything. The way a fight happens, I love this analogy. I feel like I've been saying it a lot lately, but when people are arguing, it takes people at each end of the rope holding really tight, right? Pulling back really tight. And everyone's holding on for dear life. If one person drops the rope, there's no fight anymore. You don't need to fight with these people. You don't need to win. Just drop the rope and keep being yourself. Does that make sense?
And if you, you know, sometimes there's a time to fight the whatever it is or the resistance. And there's other times where you just try to find people that are kind of close to you and aren't all the way, like, you know, for my men's group. There's so many guys in my men's group that would run away screaming from sitting in a living room talking about authenticity. I'm not trying to reach those guys. I'm trying to get the guys that know that there's something missing and they want to connect with other guys, but they don't know how. I want to connect with those guys because the guys that are busy drinking, playing basketball, at the bar,
you do
watching
those
TV, I do those things too, but I'm not trying to reach them. So sometimes you have to, like, pull the people all the way up, but other times you just find the low-hanging fruit and you build them
build
up.
From
and
them.
Then the other thing I want to say is, as a result of my men's group 2 months ago, sometimes we have these action steps. And when Kathy and I went to go see Tony Robbins, he has an incantation. And he doesn't use the word affirmation. He uses the word incantation. And it's a really powerful one. And I did for a month. I said this out loud to myself every day. And it was just a strength builder. It's a muscle that I built up to say that I am. So the incantation, I might screw it up, but it says, now I am the voice. I will believe, not follow. I will create, not doubt. I will, hold on. I have it just in case. I will believe, not doubt. I'll create, not destroy. I am a force for good. I am a leader. Defy the odds. Set a new standard. Step up. And he says it with kind of emotion that I'm not giving it justice right now. But steal that. And then if you want to tweak the words, make it your own. And put it on your bathroom mirror. And look at it every day as a reminder. Because being an outstanding leader who's willing to step outside their comfort zone and do what's right, even though it's not popular, is not an easy thing to do. And the way you do that is to constantly remind yourself with these tools, whatever the tools are. There's so many amazing YouTube videos. You can subscribe to these YouTube videos of these amazing leaders, and they just do like quick 5-minute inspirational videos. I feed my mind this stuff all the time, because if I don't, then I feel smaller. So there's so many other ways you can do it.
And then that whole like thing that Todd just read you, I love it. But then I would come in and paint that whole thing with love and compassion. Because if you take this on face value, I am the leader, I am the voice, I am the, and there's, it's entirely masculine. And I don't mean men, I mean masculine, because each of us are masculine and feminine. We have to have the balance. And this is this. And then I would paint it, I'd put some love and compassion and fairy dust around it, which makes it softer and allows people, you being a leader, allows people to come to you and you hear them. Because if it's too much this, and I'm not worried about that with you, but just anybody else who's, you know, hearing that incantation, which is really powerful, we just, it's, you know, as they say, we are water. Water is the strongest and most powerful force in the entire universe. You know, water busts into rock. It, you know, moves rivers, oceans, everything. But water is also soft. It's very strong and hard and also soft when it's on your hands, and it's also healing. So you can be both. You can be water, strong and soft. It's possible. We just don't think it is because we don't have a lot of examples of it. We think you either have to, you know, even when Todd uses the word fight, my body goes, ugh, like that. But I know what he means. Fight just means stand up, step up. But to me, that word, I don't like it, because what I get in my head is fight. But it is stand up, step up, speak up.
I'm going to switch gears.
Okay.
Rose asked us a question.
Okay.
And I'm going to unmute her just to see if she wants to ask it. Rose, you there?
Yeah.
I loved your question, so go ahead and ask.
I just was asking if there's any specific tips for handling what my grandmother used to call the witching hour of after 4 o'clock when you got nothing left. I mean, like, there's nothing left. I'm a yoga teacher, and I'm like, I can feel my shoulders up, and I'm like, bring your shoulders down away from your ears, and they're like, ah.
How many kids do you have, Rose?
Just one really big force of nature.
I love this person, whoever it is. So I know I'm going to let Kathy used to talk about this on the podcast. We haven't talked about it in a while, but it's such a very good question, very practical in that 4 o'clock witching hour. So I'm going to mute you, Rose, and here comes Sweetie.
First of all, to acknowledge you're not alone. This is not a you thing. This is a real thing that majority of us feel, that when you have young kids or older kids, that there is this point in the day when you're just like, I really can't access these places anymore to listen, to be present, to look you in the eye. And there is, I think, one of the things that dissipates our anxiety around it is acknowledging it's real. Because I think what I used to do is feel bad about it, and I would try and explain it to Todd, like, you don't understand. And really what I was looking for was validation from him. And so I'm hopefully giving you that validation and saying, yes, this is a thing. So as far as tips, it's hopefully that decreases the anxiety a little bit. And as far as tips, it's like, it's using that language. I mean, if there is something you can do, like, you know, if you know that 4 o'clock is a tough time, maybe that's the time you have your big iced tea, or you have a Coke, or you go for a walk outside and, you know, bring your kid with you, or you do something. Instead of saying, I can't believe I'm stuck in this, you say, at around 4 o'clock, I kind of lose my mind a little bit. So that's when I need to do something. That's when and again, I'm using something really simple as having, or another cup of coffee, which is more of like a stimulant, or doing something in nature where you take your kid with you and say, I can't do the house thing. I can't do the homework thing right now. We got to do something else. You know, maybe that's when you turn on the music. Maybe, because the thing is I think we instead get lost in it and we fight it and we think it shouldn't be this way, and why is it this way? And if we just accept it, then all of a sudden all these creative solutions come to us. And even telling our kid, you know, like, this is a tough time of day for me. What's your tough time of day?
How old is your kid, Rose?
He's 5 and a half.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
It's the time to do the dance party.
Yes.
It's the time to have a dance party.
Yes.
Embrace it.
We save all, you know what I used to do, and this is, I think, comes from my career world time when I was younger and I was working, is I would save anything good for myself until night when everything was done. I'd be like, yeah, I'm not going to do anything good for myself until everything's done, everything's closed up, my work is done. And that just doesn't work when you're a parent. You gotta filter in some good things throughout the day. Having the dance party at 4, having, you know, just have one cup of coffee in the morning and have the other one in the afternoon, you know. Your kid may say, well, I just got home and you're going out for a walk. Say, come with me. This is, and again, acknowledging with him and saying to him, what's your tough time of day? Because then he has language to understand you, and you don't have to be embarrassed, and you're not a bad mom for it, and all that crap that your brain tells you, bleh, it's not true. And then usually by 7 or 8, weirdly enough, we feel better. We still may be sleep deprived, but we're better.
What was I going to say? I don't know how much TV time the kid's watching, but let's say you give him an hour during lunch or right after he gets home from kindergarten or whatever. I would save that time until your witching hour time and let him watch TV or her. Is it a boy or a
boy? Son, right?
Yes. Let him watch TV during when you know that you're going to be pulling your hair out.
And go lay down.
Take a nap.
I know, Mike, we're so hard on ourselves, like, and I am too, so I'm not judging. I just, it's so funny, I see myself in all of you, and I'm laughing at myself, you know, like some of the things I'll be like, I must do all, and it's so stupid, you know, like where are we going? It's like this, I love that movie that Todd and I screened called Race to Nowhere, which is about education. But it's Race to Nowhere is in everything. We're going to clean up the house, and then tomorrow, will it get messy? Yes. There's no race. There's nothing. We leave dishes in the sink this weekend too long.
No.
Remember? We left
them
in the sink too long.
It was fine.
No.
We had it under control.
We didn't have it under control. It is back under control, but we let it go for a little bit.
Okay.
That was a good question.
Yes. What else? Who else has got some? I can read these questions, but
Millie's got something.
Oh, Millie. Hold on. Hold on to your shoppers. Hello, Millie.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
What do you got?
First of all, can I just say something to Jennifer? I just want to give kudos to you for already changing the dialogue. Mm-hmm. Dialogue in that with your not reacting in the way that they might expect you to react, you know, like this, you're already changing it. And I love, Kathy, your image, because I'm a visual person, of the tug of war that you have let go. And like, if you can just imagine, that person has just like fallen back and just like coming up going, whoa, what happened? That already has impacted that person. You know, even you haven't said nothing. You've just not reacted like they would expect. And they've just gone, oh my gosh, you know, oh. And then maybe that'll give them pause to think. Anyway, I just, kudos to you for doing that. Okay, so my question is maybe two part, and I hope this does not make me come off sounding as a little judgy or something, but my daughter, who is 10 in fifth grade, is getting friendlier, I think, with a girl that she that was in her class last year, and from the very limited exposure I've had with this friend, I've assess that their family values are not quite aligned with ours. Mm-hmm. And again, in my very limited exposure to her mother, her mom self-professes to spoil her only child. Mm-hmm. And last week, I then also heard from another mom that there may be some mean girl activity coming from this friend towards like that this other mom's daughter and possibly others. So I would not forbid my daughter to, you know, be friends with this girl. I hope that I've shown her or taught her enough about right and wrong that I really pray that she would stand up, you know, if she sees mean stuff happening. But, I mean, she's she's fairly impressionable, and I've noticed that she's always been the, in Rosalind Wiseman's words, she would be the wannabe, not definitely not the queen bee. She's the wannabe. And so I could sort of even see that this friend would be, you know, kind of befriending her and like, oh, I know I could get her to come along kind of thing, you know? So I don't know. I guess I'm just asking, are there strategies for talking to her about this? But see, the other challenge I have, this is the second part of the question, is that my daughter is very closed off about sharing her school stuff. And I try not to say, hey, how was your day? You know, I try to have more pointed questions for her. Her pat answer will always be, I don't know. No matter if it's just something I'm asking her about that happened an hour ago, she will say, I don't know. I'm like, oh, wow, that you forgot pretty quickly, you know, but I can't get her to open up. So again, because if she did open up and brought up certain things that happened at school, I could then be curious, right? And ask, oh, well, how did you feel about that? Or, you know, things like that. But I don't even have that opportunity. So do you see where I'm getting at
I do. Did you want to go first?
Yes. Let's take the first question about kids who you're worried about hanging out with your kid. I have plenty of those examples.
We've had a lot of those situations.
And it's funny. I've kind of been all over the board because I'm going to mute her just so we don't. I just muted you. I have prejudged friends of my daughter's only to find out that they're amazingly awesome kids. And conversely, there'd be like some kids I'm like, wow, I want my kid to hang out with this kid only to find out that my first impression was wrong. So it's really easy, and you admitted this, Millie, for us to prejudge. Just know that you are, in fact, prejudging. And if you're able to, you know, like I found out through, you know, I would pick up my daughter's friend and I would have and I don't want to give away any privacy, but she had kind of different color hair and she had different attitudes, and I'm like, wow, this girl kind of scares me a little bit, so I'm gonna
I know what you're talking about.
And I love this girl because I got to know her a little bit better. So the first advice is cautionary. Just make sure, you know, do a little more curiosity and research before you kind of make any final decisions. But if after that you do like, wow, okay, I know that this is a bad seed, you already kind of answered your own question, is because like the forbidding thing probably isn't going to work. But at the same time, you have to keep your daughter safe. So it's a paradox, because there's times where you have to let your daughter get hurt so she can feel how it hurts and to have some life lessons. Because if we're consistently sheltering our kids from quote unquote negative people, energies, whatever, that's not serving them at all. So you kind of have to, but at the same time, you have to kind of keep them safe. Like if they're going to go, I don't know, smoke cigarettes when they're 10 years old or whatever it is, yeah, that's probably something that you need to step in and put some boundaries around and make sure that that doesn't happen. So that is the first thing. So before I go to the second thing, what do you want to say about Millie's first thing?
Well, I want to say that, like Todd said, we've had this experience too, and I bet a lot of people on this call have had this experience. And like Todd said, it's been interesting. The way that I like to view these situations with my daughters, and this might help you mentally, is that every time they're in a situation that I kind of have that fear feeling, or I think, oh gosh, what could happen here, or what could this look like, I turn it around and I say, okay, here's some teaching for them. This person is going to be a good teacher for her in one way or another. Either it's going to be someone that she is bullied by, it's going to be someone who makes her question her values, or it could end up being a good friend, like what Todd just said. And that I address the person that way with my daughter. One situation that I'm thinking about that was a few years ago, but was, I would say, when she would talk about being with this girl, or when this girl would come to our house for a play date, which wasn't that often, because that's another little parent piece, Millie, is that Todd and I, if there's somebody that we're just not quite sure about, we're not going to create a ton of opportunities for a lot of play dates. It doesn't mean that we're going to say no every time, but the kids that our kids are, we can tell that our kids are thriving among certain kids, we create a lot of opportunities for them to see them. But if our kids feel a little stunted or not like themselves with certain kids, those may not be the kids that we're having overnights with. You know what I mean?
And the younger they are, the more influence you have. Once they get to be, whatever, 14 or 15, you have a lot less influence when they're 10 or 11 or 7 or 8, you know.
Possibly. I mean, typically they may not be telling you every single thing like they did when they were five or when they were younger, but there is still a huge opportunity for influence. And one thing that I would do is the way I start conversations with my girls about these kind of things is I tell my own stories, Millie, which if you can come up with a story, you can even say something like, you know, your friend, blah, blah, blah. She kind of reminds me of a friend that I had when I was 10 and I loved her and I loved being with her because she made me feel special sometimes and things like that. But sometimes I get really confused by things she do, or I'm making this story up as you can tell right now. So you use your own language, but open the conversation rather than focusing on the girl, focusing on yourself. And then you can even end it by saying, how does she make you feel? And you may find that she may say, she makes me feel great, because she may be experiencing some level of popularity with her, or she may be experiencing more exposure with her. And again, think of that as a learning thing. Our kids have to know what these things feel like to understand how to get through them. And it can feel a little like gripping the table, like, but I don't want to watch it. But that's where we have to be like, I'm going to be there and I'm going to keep bringing it up. And I know you said that she's not super open about it, but that doesn't mean that you're not. It's kind of like the same thing with Jen. Like, you don't have to follow her lead. You know, she may say, oh, it's fine. And you can say, well, I have another interesting story. And you're talking about yourself. Do you see what I mean? You're not judging her. You're not judging the girl. You're just talking about how you felt, or maybe someone in the community where you're like, I like being with that person, but sometimes I get uncomfortable with them, or they don't let me say my opinion. And, you know, you're sharing without needing her to say, yes, mom, I agree. And that's how my friend is. You're keeping the dialogue open on your side. You see?
Well, and I would also say, you know, it sounds like you have a list of questions that don't work, like whatever they are. I would say, come up with a new list of questions or a new perspective.
What do you mean toward her daughter?
Yeah, like she'll ask her daughter, well, what about this in school? And she'll be like, I don't know. Well, just know, because sometimes we kind of get in this habit like, well, maybe today's going to be the day where she shares really the challenges and the awesomeness of her school day. But I would say just keep getting creative and trying different things. And then, you know, obviously she's 10 years old. So everything, it all comes and it goes. It's all phases. It goes up and it goes down. It's waves coming in and out. And maybe right now she's not in a place where she wants to connect with you using her words. I've had challenges with my own daughters where I try to, like, really, you know, when it's time for me to connect, I will say, okay, we're going to drive to soccer practice. We're going to have this really heart-centered conversation with her in the car, only to find out that she's going to want to be on her phone the whole time, or she just doesn't want to talk the whole time. So it could be that maybe you're, at this moment in her life, she doesn't want to connect through words, and instead she might want to connect through touch or acts of service or playing a board game, which doesn't seem like it's real deep, but at the same time, she's connecting with her mom if she can do it in a different way. So I don't know. I guess I'm just encouraging you to be as creative as you can and don't keep trying to do the same thing over and over, hoping for a different result. I'm going to unmute you. Thoughts?
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Actually, reminded me of a little bit of advice that a friend who was a therapist gave to me about having this friend who my daughter has asked for play dates with this friend. And yes, conveniently, they have not happened yet. There was one that happened and then not many since. And she said, if you have them in your own house, which was actually, I'm like, okay, I would not have considered that actually, but that actually probably is a good strategy. I know I need to keep coming up with new questions, new ways to connect with her. She definitely is more of a touch love language. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's at bedtime that I'm hugging her or reading or whatever, and then we bring up something.
Yeah. And just remember, you know, if the things, they ebb and flow. Like sometimes it can, you know, you feel like when they're 10, it's going to be like this forever, and then it's not. And as long as you, and again, I say this all the time in many different forms, the way that we look for like some kind of victory is we look at the other person and we say, oh, now they're talking to me, or now they're doing this. We have to let go of that idea and just keep doing our thing. We keep finding new ways, even when they're not connecting. I'm going to keep trying to connect. I'm going to keep coming to you at night and giving you a hug if that's your love language. And instead of asking them to be something for us, we just keep showing up as something for them. And then you're already attuned to her and what she's like. And these friendships, good and bad, will come into her life. And you're going to watch them come and go. And you will keep bringing them up and talking about them without saying, like you said, without saying, this is how it's going to have to look or here's what you're going to have to do. You have to let, as you know, at all of us here, we have to let our kids live their lives. And we are not the ones dictating it or creating the pathway or the structure. They're living it. And we support them and love them and honor them in the process. And it can be challenging, but she's going to learn a lot from this girl. I can guarantee you. I can already feel it. And some of it won't be great, but some of it will be great. And, you know, and she'll be able to figure out what, you know, she's got it.
So, and I know that this is a little bit more narrowly focused, but I just for kicks just Googled, you know, what do you say to your kids after school? And I found two Washington Post articles. One is called 25 Ways to Ask Your Kids How Was School Today Without Asking Them. And then the other one is 28 Ways to Ask Your Teen How Was School Today Without Asking Them. So I just say that to you, like there's so many resources available.
We'll put these in the email that I send to you guys so you have easy access to them.
So, you know, I don't know if this will work, but, you know, just use, I mean, back in the old days, we'd have to like dig out a parenting book or call your best friend and say, what do I do? And now, you know, this internet thing is pretty cool.
And that, like, the first question is to say, where in the school do you hang out the most?
Yeah.
They may just say the gym or the hallway. Are a lot of people in the hallway? And then but here's the key, you guys, I keep going back to intention, but it's not because you need them to tell you something.
Because your kid's going to feel that and they'll continue to respond saying, I don't know.
The intention is connection, letting them know that you care, but you're not, if you're fishing for some kind of specific answer, they're going to know it. So you just keep it open. And when they, you know, they may say, why are you asking? Well, I don't know. Cause when I was in school, I kind of liked hanging out in the, you know, I used to hang out on the stairs when we walked in the door. So I was just trying to get a visual of where you hang out when you're in school. Do you see how that becomes more of a conversation than I'm trying to, you know, so anyway, Todd, I'm noticing there's chat. Is there anybody else who has a question?
I'm on it, okay? Sweetie. We're all good.
Oh, we're good.
Jennifer said, I find that my kids don't want to talk about school right after school. I get a better response after a cool down period.
True.
Very good. But us parents were like, no, it's when we pick them up. That's when we want to know. Because I haven't seen them since 8 o'clock this morning, and now it's time for me to connect with this kid.
We forget they're little humans. Our kids are little humans, and they're tired.
They got lots to teach us.
Yes.
I haven't even told Kathy about this, but I shouldn't say we. I have such gratitude for the people that are on Team Zen. It's an experiment that Kathy came up with like 6 months ago, and we love it, and we're still tweaking it. And we've been doing Facebook posts where we send you t-shirts and all that. And
yeah, and by the way, we've sent out about 3. I'm still getting emails from people, so just know I'm working on it still.
So we've done these conferences for the last 2 years, and we have these overrun of books that are amazing books. And as a gesture, if there's – I have them right here. I have them all stacked up. Now, this is limited supplies, so I actually know I have a lot of these. This is from Shefali. It's called Out of Control. We'll even pay for the shipping. It'll cost, you know, we have these books. So we just want you guys to get as much value out of this experience as possible. So this is Shefali, Out of Control. This is Shefali, The Conscious Parent. I'll save those for last because they're the best, sweetie. This is Rob Bell, What We Talk About When We Talk About God. Rob is an amazing teacher of ours. Here's Rob Bell. It's a relationship one.
I love this book.
The Zimzum of Love. And like I said, like I think we only have 2 left of these. So send me an email, and it's first come, first serve. And send me your address, and we'll send it to you. This is from Rosalind, Masterminds and Wingmen.
It's about boys.
It's about boys. If you got any boys, Rosalind, she's a rock star. It's funny. Some of these people that we have in our conference, I want to ask the same people back because I love them, but we also want to, you know, get new people.
We're trying to meet new people, too.
This is Queen Bees and Wannabes. I know I have a lot of these left. We have like 10 of them left. That's from Rosalind. And 3 of my favorites, Living What You Want Your Kids to Learn by Kathy Kasani Adams, Self-Aware Parent Part 2 by Kathy Kasani Adams, and Self-Aware Parent. So we don't have like a big business plan on Team Zen. We just kind of do things. And I thought an hour ago, I'm like, I'm just going to show these books to you folks. And if you want them, we'll pay to get them shipped out to you. And just know, give me like
one book.
So then, but give me like your top two or three, because if we run out, then I need to get you something else. And then I also wanted to just show you, this is Mr. Bear.
Look, Peggy gave.
Yes. So this is Mr. Bear. This is Skylar's most important non-living thing. And I love Mr. Bear. And this is his tail. And when Skylar needs to calm herself down, she'll grab Mr. Bear and she'll just rub his tail. And she'll even, when she can't find Mr. Bear, she'll do this as a habitual thing.
Mm-hmm. It calms her down, self-soothing.
In an effort to just kind of show you guys who we are all about, this is Mr. Bear.
And my Aunt Peg, who's part of Team Zen, she gave us Mr. Bear. Because my Aunt Peg collects teddy bears. She's a teddy bear gal. And look at the tail has a big hole in it.
I know. I'm worried that it might truly just kind of wither away.
That's all right. Then she'll rub here. I still have my, I got a monkey when I was 2 years old. And
should I go get
my birthday,
monkey?
You could. And then we'll let you guys go. I know you got to go. But I got a monkey when I was two and I still have that monkey and he sits in a rocking chair in our bedroom and I love him. And he's really big. So when I was young, and especially in my like preteen years, I was a teenager, 13, 14. I used to lay on him like a person and I would feel better. And so he's come with me everywhere. He came to college. There he is.
His name's Monkey.
So do you see how like I would lay on him like this? So I learned from my Aunt Peg, you're never ever too old to have a stuffed animal that you love. And you continue to carry them with you. And you give them all your sadness and all your fears because they can handle it. They're indestructible. And Todd loves Monkey too.
I love Monkey, just not as much as Kathy loves Monkey because he's really not that.
Look at him holding you. He's leaning toward you. He's choosing you.
He's all good. So anyways, I don't know. So we just want to keep giving you, delivering value and making sure that you guys like being part of Team Zen. And if you have any ideas, please let us know because we'd love to incorporate new ideas. And because right now we're doing two of these a month. We might, you know, if we feel inspired, we'll do a third one when the time feels right. But I don't know. Three was kind of confusing. Which weeks? Every other week just seems like a normal thing.
Yeah, people were saying it was too much. And I know some people have emailed us and said it's not too much, but we kind of have to go with the majority of the, you know, what people are telling us. So here's the thing. It feels like troubled times. We do have troubled times. Things are troubled. Things are difficult. I've had a tough morning. I'm sure you guys did too. These are real things and we feel them and we deal with them and we don't turn away in the face of other people's pain. We support people. We show up. That doesn't mean we watch the news all day. It means if you can give blood today, you guys, give blood. Or in the next couple weeks. Todd's really good at giving blood. There are people in Vegas who need blood. If you can give to Puerto Rico right now, do it. If you can give to people in Texas or Florida or your next door neighbor who's having a struggle, do it. This is how we stay true to ourselves and in our integrity as we continue to help people.
It's weird. Selfishly, you'll end up feeling better. It's a selfish maneuver to give blood because you're like, okay, I'm doing something.
And it's not selfish. It's the way we're built. Because we're built as compassionate beings, when someone's suffering and we help them, then we feel better because that's the cycle. We don't feel better when we put our head in the sand and we don't feel better when we're mean to people. We feel sick and our body, our physical well-being shuts down and everything's bad. But anything that makes you feel better, you know you're in alignment with the universe and your own system. It's so simple and I don't mean to be, but it's simple. If you feel good when you're doing something, you're in your integrity. You know, feel good in the good way, not the 10 glasses of wine at night thing, but the feel good in like the choices you're making.
10 glasses, sweetie?
That I was exaggerating because I didn't want to, you know.
Glug, glug.
Glug, glug. Okay, so we love you, and I'm going to be sending out an email at the, you know, in the next couple hours with this. So then you can just reply to that email if you want one of those books, or you can, if you have Todd's email, easily
Todd
accessible.
Todd at zenparentingradio.com. Give me your top three and your address so I don't have to look it up because it's quicker.
All right. Thank you for your questions. Thank you for being great people in the world. We love you.
Adios.
Goodbye. Goodbye. Goodbye.